Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Today on Hardwood Handicappers, we're recapping what the Knicks just did in winning the NBA Finals in a five-game series against the Spurs. We're also diving into some of the best value bets you can make for the 2026-2027 NBA Championship. And there is a big NBA draft update that we saw this morning coming down that deals with A.J. DeBonsa and Darren Peterson. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's start with the New York Knicks winning the NBA Finals, because we have not talked to you since, you know, Friday. That game happened Saturday night, and it was a lot of what we saw the rest of this series. San Antonio went up big. The Knicks did not sweat whatsoever. Jalen Brunson calmly came down, hit like ISO jumper after ISO jumper, contested no matter what it was going in. He played one of the best games that we've seen from him this entire season, and he did it in a closeout game, which, you know, puts him into rare air in terms of, you know, New York athletes. And just, it was sensational to watch him play, to be honest. Like, I am a huge Knicks hater, to be honest. I rooted for the Knicks pretty much until I turned like 27. And then, I don't know, when the Kristaps Porzingis trade happened, it was like, I'm out. It wasn't because of Porzingis. It was just the decision-making that went into that deal. They really didn't shop him around. They just kind of threw out whatever they could get, and it ended up being a terrible trade. And I, the next day, decided, all right, I'm going to be moving to Arizona in 2 years, which I knew at the time. I'm done with the Knicks. Like, I'd hated the team, hated the front office. I didn't like being amongst those fans. So I absolutely hate the New York Knicks, and it was tough for me to watch all of this. But Brunson, 45 points in 41 minutes. The rest of his team only scored 49 points. People keep kind of comparing him to like Kobe Bryant in the way he's just ferocious and unfazed in key moments of big games. And look, that is a really good comparison in a lot of different ways. I do think he is like a little easier to get along with, a little bit better of a leader. And I'm a huge Kobe Bryant fan, so it's not easy for me to say that. But Brunson is a special, special player. And now that he has a championship and a finals MVP, you're talking about the next 5-6 years of his career being like, you put up some good numbers and continue to accomplish big things, you're going to go down as like a top 25 player in NBA history. Like, that's what we're looking at with Brunson, because his peak right now and what he just did in those finals, it puts him in really interesting conversations with other players. I mean, a lot of my friends from New York are getting a little carried away, throwing me like side-by-side comparisons of him and Steph Curry. When Curry won his first title and Brunson won his first title, look, Steph won four titles. Brunson has some work to do, but it was an unbelievable run from him. And look, the Spurs were going to win that game if Brunson wasn't just on fire. Like, he was the one that just kept coming after the Spurs got off to that hot start. And it's just amazing kind of to look at what the mental strength of this New York team is, because they trailed by double digits in every single game in this series. And my producer, Michael Cohen, has this stat here. The Knicks led for 23% of the series. And to win in five games, it's unheard of. Like, some of the stats you've seen out there about what you would have won if you bet the Knicks live in a lot of these games and then rolled it over to the next game, like, what they were doing, it was nearly impossible. And I just, like, it goes back to a quote that my dad and I really love, this movie, Digstown. It's a boxing movie that I think is very underrated. But at the end of the movie, you know, who is it? James Wood goes to the main character. The name of the movie is Honey Roy Palmer. And he says, what you did today couldn't be done. And what the Knicks did in this series really, really feels as close to that as possible, just to continue to come back from double-digit deficits and win these games and, you know, win three of them on the road. It's incredible. And this Knicks team, like, don't love saying it because I don't like the Knicks fans, but this team was special. And I actually really like the group of players. And so, like, we'll say this, like, this is one of the best championship teams we've ever seen. I mean, like, the net rating tells you that it is the best team we've ever seen. Plus 15.4, highest net rating going back 40 years. They absolutely dominated on their way to the NBA Finals, and then they only needed five games to beat one of the best teams in the NBA. I mean, I do think that there were better matchups for New York, but they played who was in front of them. They played Victor Wembanyama, who everybody kind of crowned as the best player in basketball heading into the series. And like I said, they only needed five games to do it. They didn't need any more than that. So this team was absolutely special. I feel like there are so many good kind of stories along the way here. Like, there's the Brunson rise to superstardom, which I don't think anyone saw coming. And even after the game, like on Inside the NBA, him and his dad both admitted that they didn't see it coming. So that's impressive on its own. There's the Villanova stuff. Like, I absolutely love Mikal Bridges as a Suns fan. He was there when I started to become a Phoenix fan and got to see him go to the NBA Finals with the Suns. So that was fun. I do wish Bridges won a title with Phoenix, but I'm just really happy that he won one at all because he is such a good dude and such an awesome competitor that it was really nice to see him kind of get his flowers after, I don't know, it was a rocky start with the Knicks. I mean, honestly, the 2 years total, like, because of what they gave up for him, I feel like he was never loved by Knicks fans nearly as much as he was loved by Suns fans. But seeing him get this ring and now people kind of can take, you know, I don't know, they don't have to hate on him anymore. Like, the picks are the picks. They're gone. They got you what you wanted. You got an NBA title. They love Bridges now. That's nice to see. Josh Hart is just an awesome player. Like, no matter what team you have, you'd want to have Josh Hart on it. And then Karl Anthony Towns, by all accounts, like, the best person ever. And OG Anunoby, like, is one of the most lovable players in the league. I love, like, the fact that he's just, like, this stone-cold killer on the court and just, like, this complete kind of nerd off the court that doesn't show any emotion whatsoever. So it was a really good group of players and people. And I absolutely love Mike Brown, too. Like, if you read our VSiN NBA betting guide from before this season, you would have saw that I was way higher on the Brown hiring than most people were. Like, I know a lot of people did not want to see Tom Thibodeau go in New York. That includes, like, all the people that I speak to. But Brown had upside that Thibodeau did not have, and he ended up being kind of the perfect guy to lead this team. So don't want to kind of move on from this season without really giving the Knicks their flowers. And I just want to say, like, this is one of the best championship teams that I've ever seen, and I feel pretty strongly that it is one of the best championship teams historically in terms of numbers too. I'd say really good argument can be made that, like, this is a top five postseason team ever, and that might be modest. And then kind of an argument that I've had with my friends over the last couple of days, but Brunson's ring, like, I like to kind of, like, rank where players' rings fall in history, with, like, the top tier or the S tier being Dirk Nowitzki's title run and what he did along the way. Like, I feel like so many players win, don't want to call them faulty rings, but, like, there are two Durant rings that I think a lot of people say are not that great because of the team that he won with and what he had to do along the way. Like, he wasn't asked to go out and carry a team against really strong competition. Like, those rings are not as valuable as Dirk's, where Dirk had, if you look at that title run that he had in Dallas, really weak supporting cast as far as NBA Finals champions go. Like, it was Sean Marion and Jason Kidd past their primes in the starting five. Jason Terry off the bench was probably the third best player on that team. Tyson Chandler was number two. Tyson Chandler was in his prime, very, very good. So we'll throw that out there. But, like, that team, you look at some of the box scores from those series, like, it was an ugly, ugly roster. And not only did they win beating the Lakers with Kobe. They win beating the Thunder with Harden, Durant, and Westbrook. It was a younger Thunder team, so that definitely factored into it. But they went through the Lakers, they went through the Thunder, and then they went through the Big Three in the first year of the Big Three, which there were ups and downs that season. But in terms of talent, like, it's hard to say that you can make a tougher run than that. And Dirk did it on his own. So when I'm talking about individual rings for players, Dirk sits at the top. Nobody else is close. But Brunson's probably in, like, a tier two, as, like, a 6 foot point guard, leader of a team that no one really expected to be an absolute superstar, going out and beating this Spurs team where there were faults for San Antonio. Like, their guard play throughout this series, man, like, we'll talk about that in a second, but just so damn ugly. And it was just so bad at the ends of these games that it did turn to the point that people started to expect the Knicks to win this series. But all year long, we said the Eastern Conference didn't have a chance against the Western Conference, and Brunson delivered a ring as the best player on this team and was not alone. Like, the supporting cast for the Knicks was great, but 45 points out of 94 points in game five in a closeout game, that speaks to how important he was, and he was so good in game four as well. So, look, this is a really, really good individual championship for Brunson, and one that don't think anybody will forget in terms of just kind of ranking historically what he did for the Knicks. And I think that, you know, I've watched enough Knicks basketball and I rooted for the Knicks long enough to say that Jalen Brunson is the greatest Knick of all time. And something that they talked about a little bit on Inside the NBA about whether or not he's the biggest free agency signing of all time, I think he is, because they even, you know, they had Rick Brunson at the desk. He said Shaq was the best free agency signing of all time. The difference is you knew exactly what you were getting with Shaq. Brunson was ridiculed, and I ridiculed this signing. I thought, good player, just got paid max money to be the face of the Knicks. Don't really understand it. It ended up being a top. I ranked the players in the NBA yesterday, full disclosure, just to kind of like have some arguments ready for my Knicks fan friends, because I like to, you know, bust their balls a little bit. But Brunson, in my opinion, sixth best player in the NBA. And you got him on like a discount. You got a guy that wanted to be in New York, that wanted the pressure in New York. I believe he's the best free agency signing ever, because you got a little bit more than what you thought you were getting. Honestly, way more. And the Shaq comparison is tough because, look, he was like the most dominant player of that era. But I just feel like you knew exactly what you were getting with Shaq. You were getting a superstar. You were paying for a superstar. Brunson, you just got way more bang for your buck. And you paid quite a bit. I mean, it wasn't super max yet. Like, what was it? 4 for $110? They knew that he was going to be good, but they got like the absolute face of the franchise that they needed, that they kept striking out on, to be honest. Like, they wanted LeBron, they wanted KD, they wanted Kyrie, they wanted all these guys. Like, everybody they went for didn't want to play in New York. And then the guy that ends up being the one that leads them to the title is the one they got on kind of a cheaper contract that not a lot of people believed in. So he ended up being exactly what they were looking for. I just don't think that they knew for a fact that that's what it was. I think that they viewed Brunson as a piece you bring in, then you get your next piece. He ended up being the piece. I know that they had to make the Karl Anthony Towns move. I know they had to make the OG Anunoby move. They made the Bridges move. Leon Rose did great work building this team, but it was Brunson as the foundation of it. And I think he's the best player in New York history. And I think he's the best player to sign with, the best free agency signing ever. So kind of just wanted to piggyback off that argument that they were having on the desk with Rick, Jalen joining, you know, Shaq, Ernie, Kenny, Chuck, those guys. So it was awesome kind of watching all of that stuff after the game too. Could have done without the Dolan. The Dolan thing was terrible. I mean, like, everybody in the arena is excited. Then he turns around, he's like, we're a team. It was awful. It was such a bad 20 seconds that, you know, I almost turned it off, but I decided to keep it on. Then you got the Mike Brown stuff with the Mike, and that was awesome. So I'm happy I didn't turn it off, but yeah, that's the one side of it. The other side of it is the Spurs, and won't do too much on this because we have other stuff to talk about today and I don't want this to be too long of an episode, but the Spurs, they're going to feel really bad about the way this series ended. I mean, you lead by double digits in five games and lose four of them. That speaks to a lack of execution. And I just think this team's a little too young. That's just the reality. It's not like a hot take. This is what everyone's saying right now. This team was a little bit too ahead of where it needed to be or where it should be. And they put themselves in positions to win these games, but they did not have the guard play that they needed to. Wembanyama did not have the composure that he needed to. And Mitch Johnson coached a really bad series. I think he's a really, really good coach. Don't get me wrong. I think top five coach in the NBA, at least in the regular season. I think in terms of X's and O's, in terms of preparation, I can even prove that in this series. Like, the Spurs came out in game one of like every one of these series and played very, very well. Like, that speaks to what he's able to do on a clipboard and film study, like all of that. But in game, he has a lot of work to do. And that's the type of stuff now that as all of his players go to the gym and kind of work on their deficiencies, he's got to go back and work on this. And I'm sure he'll have some help from Greg Popovich. I'm sure he will be ready the next time he gets to the postseason, which should be next year. But this team, the guard play was abysmal. De'Aaron Fox, I don't know if he's going to need surgery or what on that ankle, but if that ankle is not kind of requiring surgery, and that was strictly just him playing poorly and kind of not being able to deal with the moment, that's really bad for the guy that was kind of brought in to be the one that can bring this team's timeline a little bit shorter and make them a contender, because this is an older player on this team. Castle and Harper, they were great, but they're young. They're as young as Wemby. Like, this core is very young. They brought Fox in to kind of speed things up and have a guy on the court in this setting that can handle the pressure and that can handle the ball. And Fox was essentially going like one-on-one, shot for shot with Jalen Brunson towards the end of these games. And for every shot Brunson hit, it felt like Fox missed. Like, as efficient as Brunson was, Fox was as inefficient, if not worse. And look, the elephant is in the room. Like, they need to trade Fox. I don't know what that trade's going to look like. I posted one on Twitter. If you follow me at Betting on X, I'm always kind of posting dumb stuff like that. But I posted Michael Porter Jr. to the Spurs for Fox and the number 20 pick that San Antonio owns. So Brooklyn gets Fox to reunite with Jordy Fernandez, who was, you know, the assistant when he was in Sacramento, somebody that got, you know, the best basketball out of Fox in the past. Maybe you kind of turn Fox back into an all-star, and he's either one of your core pieces in Brooklyn or someone that you can then flip now that his value's back up. But I like the idea of reuniting him with Fernandez, and you get a pick for your troubles in case that doesn't work out as well as you hope, because that contract that Fox has, that, you know, that major extension is kicking in this summer. He's going to be one of the highest paid players in the league. He doesn't deserve it. So I think you do need to get a pick back for him. And if you're the Spurs, you get an expiring Michael Porter Jr. If you want to extend him, extend him. But at least that's a 6'10" elite shooter that you could put next to Wemby. And I absolutely love that fit. So that's one of the trades that I came up with. I think a lot of people are going to say that Fox is untradeable. I don't think so. I don't think that really untradeable exists for good character players in the NBA. I think it's the guys that are a little bit shaky off the court that you have trouble trading. I think that I could think of a few teams that I could see jumping in on Fox, with the Nets being one, the Raptors being one. Like, they've been looking for upgrades at the guard position and don't think Quickley is the guy there. I think Quickley's a good player, but feel like for their goals, he's not where they want him to be. So that is another one. I just feel like maybe Houston, I think that there are spots for him. So don't want to say he's untradeable. Will they trade him is a different question. I don't know. I mean, Rich Paul is his agent. So if he doesn't want to trade him, he won't get traded. If he wants him traded, he will get traded. Rich Paul gets what he wants, but we'll see. That, though, was the biggest takeaway coming out of the series, is that you just got to throw the ball into Harper and Castle's hands. You got to get Fox out of there. It's just not a great fit. So we'll see what happens. In terms of Wemby, like, really interesting series in terms of off the court stuff for him, because so many people loved Victor Wembanyama heading into that series, and so many people hate him now. I understand he's dirty, or a little bit dirty. He clearly has a short temper. I did not like that he walked off the court without shaking the Knicks' hands. I will not say he's innocent in any of that. I think he's got a short temper, but you can't go from loving a guy and loving his personality to hating him. Like, there's got to be something in the middle ground. Looking forward to seeing where he kind of settles in next season, but there is real heat on Victor Wembanyama, to borrow a term from the WWE or AEW. This is a guy that really made people hate him in this postseason. Just looking forward to seeing how he deals with that, because he's a very kind of conscious person and he's a thinker, and it's probably going to bother him that people don't like him. I think he wants everybody to like him. Like, you hear all these stories about how he has like an expert marketing and PR team, and they kind of designed the perfect player that knows how to deal with the media, knows how to win fans over. Well, all of that was working until like 2 weeks ago. So I'm interested in seeing what happens from there. But the Spurs, really, really great season. I'm sure they feel they should have won. As a Spurs kind of backer there, I felt like there was a really good chance they were going to win, but they couldn't close games. They didn't deserve to win. Like, so they can lead for 77% of the series, but the Knicks won the minutes that mattered most. Like, the Knicks won that series. The Spurs did not win. So for as much as Wemby wants to say that his team dominated, the Knicks were better when it mattered most. And you know, being good down the stretch is essential for a championship team. So that is the reason San Antonio lost. And that is now what they need to work on this offseason, in addition to making some roster moves, because there were too many players on that team making good money that were not playable when these games mattered most. They need to kind of continue to tinker with things on the fringes. But that is my read on the NBA Finals and my take on the NBA Finals. Great, great season, 2025-2026, but it is time to turn the page to 2026-2027, and that is something that excites me as a Suns fan, because I did not like watching what I saw over the last couple of days. But before we do that, I did want to say, while everyone else is waiting for the season to start, the Sharps are already getting to work. VSiN Pro gives you the advanced analytics, player prop projections, and expert insights that serious bettors rely on. And right now is the perfect time to get ahead before the season tips off. Try it for only $9.99 for your first month. Head to vsin.com/subscribe and check out all of your options. And when we say before the season tips off, I'll just say right now, this podcast isn't going anywhere. We're not going to be doing it 5 days a week, but we'll probably be doing it one or two times a week. And as big news comes in, for example, if Giannis Antetokounmpo is traded tomorrow, you'll get something from me tomorrow, whether that's on the website or a new podcast. We will do kind of emergency podcasts and regroups after like big free agency days. So we will be with you all summer. I also want to do a ton of, you know, kind of preseason content, like, you know, division previews and all that, like throughout the summer. So we're going to continue to do this. We've shut down over the summer before, but we're going to keep this going. It won't be 5 days a week, but we will continue to put out podcasts. So make sure you're subscribing, whether that's on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and any feedback you can give us, we'd appreciate, but we will be here. We will be recapping everything in the NBA, and you'll hear more of me in the summer than you normally do. So don't worry, you will get my stuff if you enjoy it. Let's move on to 2026-2027, where the odds are really interesting. I mean, Spurs are the betting favorites to win over at DraftKings Sportsbook right now, so we're going to use DraftKings odds, and look, these could change a million times in the next couple of months. But right now, June 15th, 11 a.m. Eastern, Spurs are the betting favorites at plus 250, Thunder plus 260 right behind them, Celtics plus 550 in third, Knicks, who will be the defending champions when that season starts, plus 650, then everybody else is either 28-1 or worse. So really, really interesting. You have a clear top four teams, and I don't view it that way. So I just want to kind of get out some of my favorite early flyers you can take before like all the madness kind of starts. Like, there will be changes to all of this stuff. Like, if the Celtics get Giannis, they all of a sudden could be the Eastern Conference title favorite, or the favorite to win the Eastern Conference, and maybe a title favorite. You don't know like how they're going to build the roster out around him, but things will change in the next few days. But as of right now, I do have four teams that I really like. Without getting crazy carried away into going into all of these, I have the Pacers 28-1. The Nuggets 28-1, the Timberwolves 30-1, and the Hornets at 100-1. So four teams that I think right now, those odds are just crazy. For the Nuggets, it's really as simple as I still think that this team would have been in contention to win the NBA title if they were healthy. So a lot of it just comes down to what they are able to do to keep Aaron Gordon's hamstring from being injured at the worst time of the season. Maybe that means more load management than they've ever done before with him. That's fine. Whatever they have to do to keep him healthy, I'm okay with it. 28-1 for Denver with Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and the rest of that supporting cast. It's too long of a number. Like, we're going to look at that in December or January, unless something catastrophic happens to Jokic, which, knock on wood, hopefully it does not. That is not going to be the number in December or January, once we actually start watching this team play again and we're, you know, fall back in love with the Nuggets offense, the way they move the ball, the way the Joker plays. That's just a shocking number to me. So that was one that I threw in right away. Don't care what happens in the offseason. 28-1 for what I believe was, at the very worst, the second or third best team in the NBA last season. Give me that any day of the week. The others are like more of flyers. I mean, the Pacers 28-1. I'm just really high on Ivica Zubac. Like, I know Kevin Pritchard came out, apologized for the way that draft pick situation worked out with the lottery. They were in a position where they would have kept the pick in the Clippers deal for Zubats if it were a top four pick. It didn't end up landing there. It landed five. Now the Clippers are the fifth pick in the 2026 NBA draft. But that trade still got you Ivica Zubats, which is what you were looking for in that trade. That trade had nothing to do with the draft picks if you're Indiana. You were trying to upgrade your center spot because when you lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder, if you had a weakness, you still might have won the series, by the way, if Haliburton did not tear his Achilles. But if you had a weakness, it was Miles Turner. That weakness is gone. Ivica Zubats is one of the better rim protectors in the NBA defensively, a legitimate defensive anchor. I know Miles Turner is a guy that blocks some shots. In the past, he's been a really good defensive five. Zubats is one of the best defensive fives in the league. Turner is no longer that. Also, Turner was a streaky shooter, not really great offensively outside of those open jumpers. And like I said, streaky, so not even great. Just a three-point threat. Zubats is not going to be a spacing threat, but what he will be is like a dominant back-to-the-basket option at times, a great offensive rebounder, somebody you could run some offense through, and just somebody that kind of gives you a different look because you have a lot of guys on this Pacers team that want to just get up three-pointers. But Zubats plays with force. He gives you some toughness that you did not have in that playoff run, 2 years ago now. And I just don't think we've heard the last of Indiana as a title contender. I think if Haliburton's ready to go game one, sure seems he's trending that way. Like, I've seen a few videos now of him looking very good in like full court workouts. That team has everyone back that you'd want back. I mean, it's Haliburton, Nesmith, Nembhard, Siakam, Toppin off the bench, McConnell off the bench. Like, they have all of those guys. And now Zubat's thrown into the mix. I think that Indiana is every bit as good as either Boston or New York next season. And they are available at 28-1. So that's one that I'm jumping on as well. But the two others, definitely a little bit more speculative. So Minnesota, 30-1. This is a team that I always end up backing because I still think that, like, even though they don't end up winning, they do continue to outperform expectations in the postseason, even this year. Like, I don't think anybody expected them to beat the Nuggets. And then they did give the Spurs a really tough series without Dante DiVincenzo, with Edwards playing on one leg. Like, they were not healthy, and they did give San Antonio a run for their money. So Minnesota was really good again, but falling short for the Timberwolves means that Tim Connelly, one of the best team builders in the NBA, is going to go into this offseason looking to make some moves. And they've been linked to Kyrie Irving. They've been linked to Kawhi Leonard. I don't think that there's much smoke there, but I do think Kyrie Irving is someone they're really going to go after. And even if they don't get Kyrie, like, you look back to the deadline where they got Ayo Dosunmu, Connelly is just so good at swooping in and taking important players from teams that no longer need winning players. And there will be others this offseason. There will be sellers, even though there's new hope every offseason. Even though the tanking rules have changed, there will be sellers this year, and he will take advantage of them. So I just kind of think that Minnesota will address their need for another ball handler this summer. Don't know how it's going to be. Maybe it's John Morant. I don't know what it's going to look like. I just know Connelly is not going to sit back and go into next season with this roster. And Chris Finch, their head coach, who I think is awesome, said himself that he wants another ball handler. So that's more incentive. But that is the reason I like the Timberwolves at 30-1. I'm anticipating a move being made. All the way down to 100-1 for the Charlotte Hornets. This just goes back to the handicap we kind of gave throughout the entire 2025-2026 season. Once the calendar flipped to January, there was only a handful of teams better than the Hornets when you were looking at advanced, offensive rating, defensive rating, all of that, cleaning the glasses numbers, like 100, points per 100, points allowed per 100. They showed that Charlotte was an elite team, and I know they got beat in the play-in tournament. The goal for them will be to not have to play in the play-in tournament again next year. And I think that a top four seed in the East is realistic, even if they do nothing. But they have been linked to Domantas Sabonis. I've talked about that before. I really like Sabonis as a fit for this team. I think the center position was solid for Charlotte last year. Like, they got out of it what, like, smart NFL teams get out of running backs. Like, they didn't pay a lot. And they have serviceable options in Musa Diabate and Ryan Kalkbrenner, both guys that can rim run, block shots, do the dirty work. But bringing in Sabonis, like, somebody that can make the two-man game between him and Knipple with the DHOs, like, one of the most lethal pairings in the NBA, that's intriguing to me. Sabonis is also a good back-to-the-basket player, a really good rebounder. He can knock down some threes. and he's a really good passer. So you're talking about a Hornets team that was number one in the NBA in offensive rating from January on, getting one of the better offensive centers in the NBA. Absolutely love that fit. So if you can get Sabonis trading only Miles Bridges, Josh Green in a first-round pick, which I think is what the deal was. They have two first-round picks, by the way, so that wouldn't be the end of the world. Really, really like that. Then maybe you address the power forward position because you'd be losing Miles Bridges, but that's the position you want to be addressing in this draft in that range where you can get like Morris Johnson Jr. from Michigan, maybe Axel Lundeborg if he falls, or even someone like an Allen Graves. I really like the way Charlotte can kind of shape their future and their team for this year with that Sabonis deal. So all the way down there at 100-1, don't see it. I think that's a top four team in the Eastern Conference next season, and there are avenues for them to improve. So that's where I stand with kind of 2026, 2027. But we will continue to talk about this as more, you know, free agents sign, as trades happen. There will be plenty to talk about. Then one quick thing before I let you go. I did want to mention this. There was a report this morning from Sham Sharania and Jeremy Wu of ESPN that Darren Peterson is only working out and meeting with Washington, the number one pick in this draft. Meanwhile, AJ DeBonsa meeting with both Washington and Utah. I feel like maybe people believe that that means Peterson is going to go number one. Maybe he will. Like, we still don't know for sure that DeBonsa is number one pick. I still think DeBonsa is going to go number one, though. I feel like what this is Peterson being difficult with the teams behind him because there's a landing spot that he prefers in the top 10 and don't quite know what that is. There was smoke going back a few months that he wanted to land in Brooklyn. Don't really see that happening. That just seems like a little too far of a drop. But I would not be surprised if they're just angling to get him somewhere and being, you know, difficult with the teams picking 2 to 5 or whatever because they just hope that he lands in a spot that he wants to land in. I wouldn't rule out Peterson going number one. Like, he's that good. And I don't think there's a much of a difference between the top three players in this class. I've talked about it. I think Cam Boozer is the best player in this class. So, like, all of these top three teams are in really good shape. But I do think DeBonsa is kind of the safest pick for Washington. And Washington is a team that's looking to make a splash next season. So I do think the Wizards take the safe pick and the guy that, like, you just kind of know is going to be really good, even if he doesn't have as much upside as some of the other players in this class. Or Peterson. Like, Peterson might have the most upside in this whole class. Like, that is 100% fact with what he did in high school, not college. There is a chance Peterson ends up being the best player in this draft, and there's a chance he's doing it at a position that is very valuable. But I do think that we're going to see Washington take DeBonsa, even with kind of the uncertainty this morning. So did want to kind of throw that out there because I know people are probably going to see that, run over to the draft odds and see maybe it's worth taking Peterson plus 425, which is what he is at DraftKings, to go number one. I still wouldn't, unless you took my DeBonsa pick from a few months ago and got the plus 130 on him to be the first pick in the draft. If you want to do that, that makes a lot of sense because I suggested a 3-unit play to win 3.9 units. You could take Peterson for 1 unit to win 4.25, remove all risk, profit either way. That's not a bad move at all. I wouldn't hate that whatsoever. But if you're just jumping into this, I still think DeBonsa goes number one. The only way I see him not going to the Wizards too is kind of if Utah and Washington are able to kind of work out a deal. And even if that happens, I still think DeBonsa goes number one. So I don't know. I'm not really moved by the reports this morning. I still think we're going to see the order kind of play out the way that we think it's going to play out with DeBonsa, Peterson, Boozer as 1, 2, 3 in that order. So wanted to get that out there, but really appreciate you guys listening today. I've had a really great time doing this podcast in this capacity again, like doing it every day. It's awesome. I love being this plugged into the NBA because I already am. I just like getting my takes out there all the time. So hopefully you enjoyed listening throughout the 2025-2026 season. But like I said, there's way more to come over the next couple of weeks. So there's no reason to expect this podcast to go anywhere. We're going to continue pumping out content. It's just going to look a little bit different. We're going to be looking at the offseason. We're going to do a lot of NBA draft over the next week. And we're going to really focus on which teams are making themselves better for next season, so that we have an early edge when next season starts. But like I said, appreciate you listening. Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please like, comment, whatever you can do to help us out in terms of feedback. We'd really appreciate a subscribe on YouTube where it's Hardwood Handicappers, one word. But yeah, appreciate you being here all season. Hopefully you're with us next season, and have a great day.